Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to a brand new episode of Artsy Fartsy Immigrants. It has been quite some time, and there are a lot of things to get into today. First off, just apologies for not making more frequent episodes. But once we get into the meat of this particular episode, you're going to understand why I sort of unintentionally took a break, an unplanned break. Basically, I think what's best is probably just to jump right into it. You might have noticed the title of this episode, and that is 23 days. Now, I'm counting 23 days. That is of the day of this recording, maybe not particularly by the time that you hear it, but 23 days is how long that I have been officially sober. Now, I have been going through a lot of changes recently. And I think, well, you know, what better platform or, you know, what better avenue to express or go through, you know, said changes than with a podcast? That was originally the reason why I even got into listening to podcasts in the first place. The main reason why I started wanting to make one years ago. God, I think it's 7 years ago now. It's crazy. The reason why I got into all of this and why I, you know, continue to do it, hopefully now more frequently, now that I have made the changes that I've made, hopefully this will continue to be a great platform and avenue for me to explore these changes in my life. And my only goal and wish is that with the brutal, occasionally brutal honesty that will accompany these podcasts and these testimonies, if you want to call them that. My only goal or wish is that with them, there is some help or some sense of community or connection for people like you, people out there who might have also gone through something similar to me. So 23 days is how long I have been sober. And I use that word really, really accurately to how you think of it when it comes to addiction. So I'm going to go ahead and just put this right out there here at the very top, okay? I debated about discussing it point blank on the podcast. I debated if I wanted to be this honest with strangers. You know, I know I have a lot of friends and, you know, family who listen to this, and they already know everything. So I didn't have any issue with that as if I was, you know, trying to hide something. But when you're, I don't like the term public figure, but in a sense, I kind of am to a point. And when you have an audience, you have to kind of debate to yourself how much of your real life do you want there to be, how much of it do you want out there? How much of it do you want the world and your following and everyone to know about? How much of your real life do you want to press, push out there, right? And so I debated for quite some time about how long I would wait before talking about this. And I debated on if I wanted to do it at all. But recently, I have had a really wonderful sort of self-awakening with sobriety. And I think the best thing I can do is to absolutely not hide that from people who might also be struggling, who might enjoy hearing that they're not alone with these things, because my God, that is 100% what I realized I needed. And I didn't realize it until much, much, much later on. And I'm so thankful that I realize now that talking about it is actually like the best thing that could have happened to me. So that's why I'm here talking about this today. So, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to go ahead and say the expression that I've been practicing to get more comfortable saying. It's still something that identifiably is, you know, understandably a bit tough to get used to, but it's important that I get used to it. I am an alcoholic. And I am so thankful that I am working on myself. I also want to talk about this too, because I had a very revelatory experience in my very first AA meeting recently. I started AA and I go to, on a weekly or, you know, bi-weekly, well, not twice a week. I don't know if that means every 2 weeks. About every 2 weeks or so, I go to this outpatient clinic for assistance and advice and help, people giving, you know, tips, just keeping me, you know, kind of aware, not like getting too comfortable with the situation. Well, maybe that's the wrong way to put it. Basically, I'm going to people in one capacity or another, whether that's back in therapy or at this outpatient clinic or in AA, I'm in a place where I'm sharing my story and listening to other people's stories and getting advice and getting, getting the help that I for so long really needed and convinced myself that I did not need. And so now I'm really comfortable and happy to be talking about this. And particularly, and this is why I wanted to start with it, particularly I'm really happy to be talking about it because of especially AA. So for anyone who's never gone to any sort of anonymous group, whether it be, you know, for narcotics or there's Al-Anon, also there's the groups for people who whose parents were addicts and how they struggled. And for people who've never, had to or, you know, did participate in any of these groups, side note, I think that AA is, like, honestly great for just for everybody, even people who don't have issues. And I'll tell you why. Because, or people who don't have addiction problems, I should specify. I actually think that that's really good because it's so therapeutic. It's honestly so insanely, so much more insanely therapeutic than I would have ever in a million years thought. And AA, once I, you know, came to terms with the fact that I am an alcoholic, once I came to terms with that, AA was actually the thing that I was scared of the most. I guess because in a way, it kind of made it real, if that makes sense. Like, even though I was already going to the outpatient clinic, and even though I was already, you know, in the first steps of getting the help that I needed, I, is someone mowing the lawn? Hopefully you guys can't hear that noise. I think, well, it's a hot, sunny Saturday, so someone's probably mowing the lawn. Hope that's not too noisy for you guys. Basically, I think, you know, AA, you know, I'd only ever seen it depicted in, you know, movies and TV shows, and I think something about that is what I was more afraid of, because once, for me, once the news, or once the truth of being an alcoholic was no longer something I could hide, it was something I knew was true, and now had to, like, really face it, once that part was over, I felt an enormous sense of relief, but the idea of AA terrified me because I still kept sort of tricking myself, or convincing myself in one way or another that, that's one step I don't need, you know, like that would be something that I like, oh, well, I, you know, obviously I don't need that, you know, that's for the real people with the real problems, you know, but that's actually a really bad way to look at it. And I see that now, and I'm so grateful for having gone. And I really, like, look forward to going back, if that makes sense. So let me start at the beginning, and then I'm going to get into why I think AA is just so, so spectacular, and why I think people should just go to things like this, because it's so therapeutic and cathartic. But let me start at the beginning. So for, you know, without giving away like every part of my, without giving like away every single part of my story, because there are some things that are still personal. What I will say, you know, there's things I only share in AA or things I share with my counselors and stuff like that. But what I will say is that I am an alcoholic, and it started, you know, probably the increase to a point where like it could have, I could have already like thought about maybe cutting back, I would say, was even a year ago. Like, it wasn't as bad as it was when I finally was, you know, caught and, you know, confronted about it, thankfully. It wasn't as bad as it was there at the very end before I finally stopped drinking, but it was still increasing, you know, incrementally, and that's how it is. It's very gradual. You might, you know, start having a drink, let's say, like, the morning after a party where normally you would... I remember, like, wanting to have nothing to do with alcohol after a party. I mean, I remember that even, like, as recent as living in Germany, like, having a party and being like, oh, my God, I'll never drink again the rest of my life. And, you know, and then there's this interesting thing that takes place that's gradual where suddenly you start seeing alcohol in a very, very, very different way from how it, how you used to see it. It's like a change, and it's so subtle that it's crazy. It's, and you always tell, you know, you have people who say like, well, why couldn't you just stop? Why couldn't you just put things down? And those are very naive questions. I mean, it's, why do you think that? I mean, I mean, I never liked that question to begin with, even before I became an alcoholic, but I really don't like that attitude towards it, because it's just not that easy. It's just not reality. It's just not how it works. But anyway, what my point is, it's gradual, and around, I would say, yeah, I guess about a year ago, it started to really pick up, and because it's so gradual, you don't see or think or really know that there's a problem forming. So by the time that the problem does form, it's way too late. And you're in the thick of it. And that's where the disease is, you know, really takes over, and you really can't do anything about it anymore. As, you know, a lot of, well, probably every addict who is, you know, working on sobriety will tell you. So about a year ago, it was increasing. And then the last 6 months before everything, you know, came to light about my my problem, or my choices and behaviors I was making, before everything came to light, it was really bad. And it was at the point where I knew that it was too much. But I, you know, like every other alcoholic, I was hiding it. You know, I was hiding it from the people closest to me. Literally no one knew. There were some, I was getting sloppy at the end, and thankfully that's how I got caught. My therapist says that she believes that could have been my subconscious choosing to get sloppy with hiding the bottles and hiding, you know, hiding the drinking as much as I was. And I like to think that that's probably, that feels true to me. Like, I wanted to stop and like actually just couldn't. And then it became more and more of the solution to, like, the more guilt I had about doing it, and the more I hid it, the worse I felt. Hence, then I would drink to, you know, numb that feeling and to feel better again, artificially. And that's a very common story. That's a very common problem. That's like how it happens for a lot of people. And I, it was overzealous. It was. It was an insane amount that I was participating in, and I was hiding it, and no one knew about it. towards the end when I was getting sloppy, there were some concerns. I was addressed about it privately by, you know, some people very close to me. And of course, you know, I was drunk and lied about that too, to their faces, which I later, you know, apologized for and everything when everything came to light. And, you know, then you're filled with just immense shame and guilt for lying. And then you keep drinking, da, da, da. Anyway, finally, 23 days ago, as of this recording, I was confronted by people very, 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 very close to me, and was kind of given a pretty serious, like the most serious ultimatum of my life about, you know, keeping this, you know, these people in my life or not. If I kept lying, you know, so I accepted, I knew they weren't kidding. I knew they weren't bluffing. And, the relationships in my life are far, far more important to me than I can't give enough to these people. And the people I'm talking about, you know, you guys know who you are and stuff. And I can't, it's hard to explain what I'm trying to say here. Like, I care so much about the people in my life, and it took an ultimatum, it took the ultimatum of like, we're out of your life. Like, we're out of your life. It took that ultimatum to kind of shock me out of the lie, and thank God it did. Oh man, the relief of of not hiding anymore. You have no idea. And I want to try and give you some idea. When you lie, as much as I was, as much as every alcoholic or addict does and will, because they are at that point completely a slave to the desire. When you lie and hide that much, your only goal is to not get caught. It's your only goal all day long, 7 days a week. And then you feel shame and guilt about all the lying and the hiding, so you keep drinking or doing your drugs, and then you think to yourself, now I'm really an asshole because I'm lying and hiding and I'm still drinking. And if I could just quit, then I wouldn't even get caught. And then no one would know any better. And then I would be good. But then you know that you can't. And then when you can't, and then you feel bad because you can't, then you drink even more. And it's just this horrible cycle. And it just goes on and on and on and on and on and on and on like that. It just goes on and on. And it's so draining. It's so unbelievable. It's the most draining. It's like a marathon. It's a marathon every single day of not wanting, of like the hesitation of maybe someone's about to be near an area where you have, you know, hidden bottles, or, you know, you check in your mind like 1,000 times thinking, oh, did I put that away? Did I store that correctly? You know, are they going to know? Am I screwed, you know? And that's just so exhausting. It's crazy. And it takes up every single facet of your brain power. Wondering to yourself if you're about to get caught, if today's the day, if that was protected or not. And factor that in with the fact that if you're not, for just a second, not thinking about if you're going to get caught and how bad you feel because that's all you think about, then your only other thought process is, when can you get the next drink? Isn't that just so, it's so crazy. It's so crazy. When I look back on it now, I really can't believe how my thoughts were always on when I was going to be able to drink. And all of the events that I went to, and all of the obligations I had to fulfill, all revolved around making sure that I either had alcohol with me so that I wouldn't, you know, not have it on me. Don't really know a better way to say that. I wouldn't get antsy. You know, if I knew that it would be there, then I wouldn't get, yeah, then I could drink it, right? And if I didn't know when I could get it, then I would really get bitter and antsy, and then I would like almost psychosomatically create withdrawal feelings in my head, or maybe it was real. I mean, it's real in my head, so I guess it is as real as it is, as it can be. And then because of that, you're either like just fiending for when that drink will be, wondering when that drink will be, wondering how you can get that drink, and then on top of that, always wondering how you can hide that drink, how bad you feel because you're not present in the moment and you're only thinking about drinking. So that way, when you finally do get your drink, you're feeding two different kinds of monsters, and it's just horrible. It's just horrible. And you're pushing people away like hell, just lying and hiding and fabricating and pretending so much. It is astounding what you will do to get that drink. So when I finally had this ultimatum and knew that it had to stop, I was so relieved. And I cried and cried and cried and cried. And some of that, I mean, of course, tons of shame and guilt, just an ocean of shame and guilt. You know, that's something I'm going to have to, you know, be working through. And there's a lot of forgiveness that I've bestowed upon myself and received from the lovely people in my life, of course. But there's always going to be the shadows of the past creeping up. Behaviors you made, choices you made, decisions you made that will linger, you know, in your head. And that's stuff that's, you know, my demons. And the job now is to not fall back on drinking when those demons win. Like, when those demons win their argument and you do just feel like an awful, awful, unworthy person, then the hard part is not drinking when they've won the battle in that moment. So that's why you go to AA. And that's why you build friendships and relationships with people who have gone through exactly the same things and worse. And there's always someone with a case where you immediately connect with them and feel for them. And I think... shout out to my friend Al, a guy, he's 2.5 years sober. He lives in Australia. He's having a baby with a good friend of ours named Lauren. Wonderful guy. And I knew that he was sober. And when things came out for me, I think I was like 14 days or something in when I wrote him finally and was like, hey man, I would just love to hear some advice. He has been so supportive to me. We have like weekly phone calls planned in our phones, and he called me and we spoke for hours. He recommended books to me that I've ordered. This very nice guy named Daniel from the outpatient clinic has recommended a lot of things to me and been very, very helpful. But what Al said to me really had an effect on me. What he said was that the greatest thing that's helped him the most, that keeps him steady and strong and keeps him focused and realizing that just life is just so much better without alcohol, is going to AA, and the stories you hear there and the connection you feel there. And there, you know, there's like certain rules about it, certain rules about, you know, you're not allowed to, that was an interesting thing for me to learn, was that, when people tell their story, you know, someone's saying they're not doing well and they really wanted to drink and they didn't do it today, but they're taking care of their, you know, sick family member and they're struggling, that you're not supposed to at all say anything like, it's going to be all right, you know, you did good today, stay strong. It's only just quiet acceptance without judgment. And that was a new thing for me, because I'm the type of person who, hearing something like the stories I heard in AA, my gut instinct is to like unmute, because I did it over Zoom, the first one. There's one on Zoom like every hour. This overwhelming urge inside of me to want to say like, hey, but look what you did. You know, you made that cup of coffee instead of picking up like a bottle of wine from the gas station or something. You know, good for you. You made the right choice. It's going to be all right. Stay strong. It was very hard for me to sit there quietly and with it, along with everyone else, and just applaud them for sharing. You know, it's a weird feeling, and I'm going to have to get used to that. But I, you know, there's the outpatient clinic, there's therapy, there's Al who's helping me, but my experience with AA, and this is what the whole point of this episode really is to get to like what that was like. I would heavily, heavily encourage people to give it a shot, even if they're just looking for a sense of community. Because I signed in very nervously, like I said at the start, you know, it was kind of like the thing that would have, in a sense, confirmed to me even further, even though I'd been in a clinic already, the thing that would have convinced, or, you know, made more concrete, in a sense, that I, you know, am an alcoholic. And there's still part of your brain that wants to tell yourself that you're not as bad off as them, which is stupid and a very naive way of looking at it. And I joined the Zoom, and there's all these people from all over the world. There were people from Australia there, and people from the States were signed in. It was like this perfect time of day where people could either start their morning with it, which I think is good. For me, it was lunchtime. For Australia, it was the evening. And I immediately, with people that were different ages. There was a guy in there who was like 70. There were people in there, a couple of people around my age, a lot of women, a couple of older guys, people from Switzerland and like Brazil, and the widest ranging group of people you could possibly imagine. And there I am thinking, oh, I'm not going to have anything in common with them. I'm going to do this meeting because I need to start it. Otherwise, I'll never start it. I need to start this. And then I will thank them for their time. Maybe I'll speak, you know, at some point. And boy, did I speak. And then I will, you know, find another one. Which, you know, a lot of people go to different meetings. You don't have to just pick one and stick with it. But I wasn't thinking I was going to get much out of that particular group. Well, I was completely wrong. It did not matter at all that there were people in there who were, you know, in their 70s, or women in their 50s, or mothers, or, you know, factory worker guys, some 60-year-old guy, you know, just listening in from the road. His phone was like on his dashboard, which I think that was kind of cool. You know, it wasn't weird in the slightest. You know, there's the classic sort of a bit of uncomfortable feeling, joining something for the first time. I had this moment in my head when I first signed in, and I was the only new person, and I signed in exactly on time, and this elderly man answered the phone, and he's one of, like, I guess the curators or the, you know, people who set it up, and they said welcome, and then I don't know how we got to where he explained where I was, but I think because I was new and stuff, I think he was like, you know, are you in the right place or something? And I said, I think I'm in the right place. And he's like, well, this is for people who suffer from alcohol addiction like myself. And I said, oh. And then my gut reaction was, the first thing, it was like this improv thing where I didn't even think before I spoke. I just said, oh, that I'm in the right place. And then that hit me that I said that. Like, I'm in the right place for people with alcohol addiction. God. But very, very quickly, that, you know, they read a little bit from what they call the Big Book. It's essentially like a Bible for alcoholics. It's the like book that Alcoholics Anonymous follows. For those who don't know, because I didn't know, it was founded in the 30s. And at the time, you know, there is part of the steps that are all about believing in higher power. But when it was originally written, it was specified to God. And the book, the older writings in the book, similar to the Bible, it does have like older passages from the old days, and then it has like updates from, you know, newer contributors and stuff. It's a very big book. I have not even cracked a dent in this thing yet. But they do a little bit of reading from that, and then they get into the open room, like, okay, anyone can talk. Now, when it got to the open talk, part of me wanted to get mine out of the way, but someone else spoke up first. And it was just the most... What can I say? It was so emotional. It was so emotional for me. These people shared some of the, like, darkest, most personal, most, like, I don't want to say embarrassing. It wasn't embarrassing stuff, but, like, you know, dark realities of what they've done in their lives, what they go through, what they go through with themselves, like stuff they did in the past that still haunts them, some of their accomplishments, how long they've been sober, and it was fascinating, not only just as not just like anthropologically or like socially, not just learning about people in that way, but it was fascinating. I'm drawing while I talk. Trying to think the best way to say this. Not only because of just listening to people and learning about their history, but it was fascinating to see just how safe of a space that really, really, truly is, and how it's expected that this. You immediately realize. Sorry for me, like, trying to find the words so much here, but it is still such a new thing for me. You immediately realize that this is probably the only place in the entire world, all day and all night, where these people, most of these people, can really talk. That was the feeling you get. You realize, like, wow, this is so deeply, truly, purely honest communication. I don't know how to put it any better. It's just, I don't know. Like, I was just at the Munich Film Fest, and, you know, there's small talk, and then there's friendly talk, and then there's like a little bit of interpersonal stuff. This was the most truthful human interaction that I've ever experienced. Like, the realest of real, with these strangers. And I know all their names. I don't meet 7 strangers in an hour and know their names. I know all their names. Because you're just impacted by, like, real people. And it was really, it's a strange word I'm about to say for this, but it was so beautiful. And I immediately understood what Al meant when he said that AA was the, like, single-handedly most impactful thing that in his, you know, 2.5 years has remained constant, not only for him, but for other people in his group. Because he said, oh, dude, we've all heard the stories of, you know, the people who are in therapy or outpatient clinics or, you know, doing this or doing that or reading the books. He's like, dude, but all of them say that AA is the number one reason why they stay sober. And it doesn't cost any money. It doesn't, like, no one... Like, you don't have to pay any fees. You don't have to donate anything. You know, even if there's like a PayPal link for support, they always say, you know, you can if you want to, but you are more important than your money. And, like, we're just really happy that you're here. And it's not mandatory at all. Like, it's really, that was cool too, because I thought, oh, if this is like a weekly donation thing, I don't know. I would have felt a little used, but they were really adamant. And they like never really talked about it. It was not at all the purpose. I'm losing track here. Basically, they spoke so earnestly, and it was like from the first person on, I was already crying for them. And what was also amazing was that all these different walks of life, different ages, different nationalities, different backgrounds, different stories, every single one of them had something that struck my chest like a hot knife. Something they'd experienced, something they had done in their drunken days, something that they felt in the moment as they're struggling through their week. Just, you know, even if I couldn't put my finger on it, it was like a feeling. I felt them and it hit me and it just blew me away. And I'm so grateful for them, and I'm grateful that I got to, you know, experience that. And I'm grateful for, you know, having been there and for having seen what it's really like, and putting all my, you know, what do you call it? Like my assumptions to the side. I really look forward to going back. And if anyone out there hearing this is struggling in any way, please, please, please get the help that you need, because it's, you know, I'm still a sobriety virgin here, and I'm not saying that every day is easy. It's not. And I'm not saying that this patch of sobriety that I'm on is going to be it for life, you know, because the slogan that alcoholics live by, and I really do find more and more new meaning in it, is one day at a time. They're one of the older gentlemen who sounded, he had the most amazing voice. It was like Sir Ian McKellen, but American. His whole thing was, I don't count days anymore because it's only about today. And I was like, Oh my God. That's so beautiful. There were people talking about how they, you know, weren't doing what they should be doing. They weren't doing their reading. They weren't, you know, calling their sponsors, how they worry about relapsing. And then there was a woman who was like, you know, really struggling taking care of her family, and how she straight up said, like, I'm not doing well. And it's just so real. And then you have people who have positive stories and are so glad to be there. Well, everyone's glad to be there, but, you know, it was more like, man, I used to do this, I used to do that. I'm just so grateful for all of you guys. I'm so thankful that you're sharing. And then it got to my turn, and then I'll wrap up with that. But I towards the end, I went, and I just immediately started crying. It was really emotional. And I felt very heard. I felt very appreciated and like welcomed, deeply, warmly welcomed by all these strangers. And I discussed, you know, AA is where you don't, you know, I was like learning from them as they were speaking. You don't hold back, because that's where like the little demon starts to get his power. So I told like the fullest of full truth about my alcoholism. And only in therapy, to my closest people, and in AA, do I do that. And man, it just hit me, and I just sobbed, and probably apologized too many times for sniffling into the microphone. But it just felt great. And I'm really thankful for all of those people. I can't wait to go back again. I'm going to do it next week. I have a call with Al on Monday. And yeah, I just if you're in a position, I mean, it's easier said than done. I mean, come on, I'm an alcoholic, but like, if you're in a position where you think you're getting too far down the hole, and you're scared to tell people. I've been there, and I have to say, it wasn't until I actually did it, where I actually did it, going to AA, where I realized, oh my God, like every single thing that I felt that I assumed nobody, except for maybe like really crazy people who were so off their rocker, could ever be going through, because who would go through this stuff, blah, blah, blah. It wasn't until I actually went to AA where I realized every single alcoholic has multiple, if not everything, in common with each other. It's a terrible disease, and it takes far too many lives, way too young. I'm so thankful for every single day that I don't drink, and that I get to, you know, spend another day talking to those I love. And it is worth it, and it's never too late. So I'll leave you guys with that. Serious episode today, but, you know, serious life changes. Thank you so much for listening, and if you want to hear funny stuff, I do have a comedy special to watch for free on my YouTube. In the show notes, I will put a link for English language Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. You can just join on Zoom. You don't even have to put your camera up. Some people that spoke didn't even have their camera up because they couldn't. They were at work and they just wanted to listen to stories and feel supported. So I will put, my friend Al sent me a great podcast about sobriety with people's testimonials, really amazing. And I will put the link for the online Zooms as well for people who just want to hop in. Check out the link in the show notes if you want to check out my social media content, where I actually am funny, hopefully, and do stuff on YouTube and comedy. And I will be performing at the American military bases later this October, along with Cologne. If you're listening from Cologne, I'm going to be at the Cologne Comedy Festival. Please go get your tickets for that. And otherwise, guys, one day at a time, this too shall pass. You are loved. Stay strong. And thank you very much for listening. Bye-bye. Look out, baby. The saints are coming through. And it's all over now, baby blue. Artsy Fartsy Immigrants. Ein Podcast von Jordan Prince und Moritz Batscheider. Produziert für M94.5.